This is an MUT Radio podcast.
It is MUT Radio, Shape and Own Your Future. And you are listening to the Vukubangene Breakfast Show with Ulu Shozi right here on MUT Radio. Right now, it is exactly 8:15, which means it is time for the blackout state. And this is where we talk about issues that affect us. And we have people of influence or people who know what they're talking about to actually share their knowledge with regards to the issues that are affecting us as South Africans. And on the line today, actually, we have Mr. Justin Harrison, who is an entrepreneur, an investor, and author and content creator as well. And he has lived many lives and pushed boundaries to develop innovative business models. He actually stumbled into entrepreneurship at 13 years, offering haircuts to students at his boarding school, an act rooted in necessity, brought out a raging businessman. 106 businesses later, at the age of 40. By this time, Justin had lived in the US for 4 years and worked with the likes of Corey Rood, pinning himself on the map as a hot commodity. He consulted to leading companies, Amazon, BBC, General Motors, and AIG, racking up 25 years in the fintech space. With an unshakable vision and deadly persistence at 19, Justin became the first importer of creatine in South Africa and started the very first online store in SA. His talent to find potential and connect complex dots proved his success repeatedly with the world's first insurance aggregation system and the first internet marketing method when the world saw email as a tool to receive mail. When investing in his very first stock 22 years ago, he earmarked a method that he uses today that focuses on buying a business rather than a stock. During this journey, he has published 8 personal finance books, been featured on television and magazines, as well as aired on radio. Justin's genius lies in his ability to make the complex simple. His podcast and YouTube channel are dedicated to doing just that. In order to educate and elevate today's consumers, when the futuristic is not innovating and creating, he spends his time with his wife and 3 children pursuing equally challenging sports and personal peaks. His value system extends from his career into his personal life, where he believes the biggest global change is rooted. Now, we do have Mr. Justin on the line. Mr. Harrison, how is it?
Good morning, Lushozi. Welcome. I should say, nice to chat to all of the listeners, and I've been doing quite a few radio interviews recently, obviously because of the stuff that's been going viral on the internet.
Yeah.
And it's been really good connecting, especially with the youth of the country. There's a really good energy in the country at the moment, and people are asking critical questions and people are hungry for change, and I think it's important.
Yeah, definitely. Now, before we actually get into the interview, because we are going to be talking about Namhlanje Eskom and the fuel price increase, because, wow, 27 rand a litre only to drive home to a dark home is really something else, eh? So there is an article that was released by IOL that there's an entrepreneur who said, "Load shedding is killing my business." That was Uthemba Limekaya, who is an innovator, an entrepreneur, and a pizza maker from Orange Farm in Gauteng. His business, however, comes to a grinding halt for hours on end because of blackout. He cannot get orders out, and he definitely cannot make the pizza because he uses electricity to make the pizza. But he's not the only one as well, because there is also Usfiso Nyembe, who owns a hair salon, who definitely agrees that load shedding hits him and his employees hard. Business cannot keep paying their employees to be present during a power outage, as essentially we will be paying no workers. How do I justify paying someone to sit around and wait for the power to come back? That is the current state of our country right now. Entrepreneurs, especially small entrepreneurs, are struggling. And I'm sure you can relate to that one of a hair salon, because you started off as, you know, offering haircuts at a boarding school.
Exactly. And, you know, the thing is, this affects the smallest businesses all the way up to the biggest businesses.
Mm.
And, you know, it's crippling the country, but more importantly, it's crippling the future generation's economic opportunity, because this problem is going to not be fixed for many generations into the future. And the longer we persist in this direction, the longer it's going to take to fix.
Yeah, definitely. So let's get into it. According to you, you know, besides what we told by Eskom and other news outlets, why do we actually have load shedding? Maybe let's start there.
Well, look, I mean, first of all, there's no question about it. South Africa has a capacity issue.
Mm.
And there's a lot of reasons that we have a capacity issue. First of all, you have to take cognizance of the fact that we came out of apartheid. Apartheid was a system that only provided for a small number of people in terms of power consumption.
Mm.
So essentially, when the dawn of democracy came around, we essentially should have started building power stations very aggressively.
Mm.
Instead, what we went into this pattern of maintaining what was handed over. So instead of building, we went into maintenance, and that was the first problem. And then maintenance, of course, fell by the wayside because people started taking salaries that they shouldn't be taking.
Mm.
You know, there was theft on a grand scale at Eskom and a lot of the other state-owned enterprises.
Mm.
And so there wasn't money to put back into maintenance. So eventually maintenance fell by the wayside. And so what you had is you had this compounding effect of not having generated additional capacity, then maintenance falling by the wayside, and then this all culminated into what we now know as load shedding. The thing is, the current set of load shedding that we've had at the moment has got nothing to do with capacity issues. And this is the big issue that I was hitting on.
Yeah.
Because everybody assumed that the current set of load shedding was heading towards stage 6 and potentially stage 8 was because of the traditional capacity issues that we've experienced over the last few years, which is totally not true.
Mm.
I broke the story on social media because I've been following the trade unions very closely. And there was wage negotiations which happen every single year at Eskom, almost to the day every single year. NUMSA members threaten to down tools, and consequently, the negotiations tend to happen pretty aggressively because obviously, Eskom doesn't want the country to go without power.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this is something that wasn't making its way to mainstream media, and everybody was making the assumption that once again Eskom has a capacity issue. But the reason why the power was going out is because the unions down tools, and essentially that means that there weren't enough staff to basically keep the power stations operating. And when this happened, and I broke the story, there was a huge backlash from Eskom. There was a huge backlash from a lot of people in the traditional media saying it's absolutely not true.
Yeah.
And then a couple of days after I started putting those videos out, there was actually an article that came out on My Broadband actually acknowledging from Eskom that actually, yes, indeed, NUMSA members have down tools, and they are in advanced negotiations. Now, the problem is twofold. First of all, they're actually not legally allowed to down tools because it is obviously critical infrastructure in the country. That is part of the mandate.
Yeah.
And the second part is, I think the public has a right to know and understand that we're being held ransom, not just by Eskom, but we're being held ransom by the trade unions. And it's a big problem.
Yo. That is very tense, actually, and I think I definitely saw the story broke that actually the Eskom workers are on strike, but they also kept on pressing on that on top of capacity, now we have workers on strike, so definitely we are going to suffer load shedding, and it might actually worsen. Now, also on your videos, you mention a lot about, you know, how ridiculously high the executives are getting paid to Eskom, and you even compare it to the minimum wage as well. And, you know, so I'd just like to hear from you. How much do you think they should be getting paid? Let's just start with the executives first.
Well, look, I mean, let's go right to the top. I mean, if we look at the CEO position, I think it is absolutely insane that the CEO of a state-owned enterprise that is costing the taxpayers, losing billions every year, is being paid $7 million a year as a basic salary. That's excluding benefits. That's excluding additional costs to company. We're talking about almost 600,000 rand a month for him to be CEO of the company. That is absolutely iniquitous as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And the way I compare this to people is I say, imagine if that was a private enterprise and they didn't have the opportunity at the end of every year to go back to government and say, you know what, we've run out of money. Please stick your hand in the taxpayer's cookie jar.
Yeah.
Pull some extra money out for us. That company would go into liquidation. But they continue to pay these salaries because they know the taxpayer is going to keep fitting the bill.
Mm.
And it isn't justified. And that problem extends its way all the way through to management. Now, at the moment, Eskom is currently the fourth best paying employer in the country. If you take the total number of employees and you divide that into the total wage bill, they're currently the fourth best paying employer in the country. And so whilst I fully accept there's a lot of employees at Eskom that definitely earn way down on the salary scale, average at Eskom is way above industry standard. In fact, it's about 4.5 times higher than the industry standard in the private sector. So that tells you the salaries are out of whack.
Mm.
The other thing that I have a huge problem with, and this is something I was trying to point out in my videos, is that there is a big pay scale gap between the executives, and I'm talking about specifically board members, senior management, and people actually on the ground doing the work.
Yeah.
And my argument has been to the NUMSA workers and to those striking and those on the picket line. Instead of holding the taxpayer accountable for these shortfalls in salary that they're arguing about, they should be calling for management to take a cut in pay. They should be calling for the board members to take a cut in pay and redistribute those salaries to the lowest paid workers instead of every single time coming back to the taxpayer and expecting the taxpayer to fit the bill, because that, as far as I'm concerned, is unpatriotic.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, man. It is actually very surprising. A state-owned enterprise would be on the top four amongst the highest paying, while we have a capacity issue as well. Now, Eskom is also in billions of debt, actually. And, you know, one would assume that maybe that debt is being used to, you know, increase capacity at Eskom. Now, has there been like maybe a portion of these billions redirected to, you know, actually increasing capacity, or just all of them are dedicated into making sure that everyone at Eskom is getting paid and the NUMSA workers as well get back on their feet?
Well, look, I mean, I've been combing through Eskom's financial statements now for the last 10 years.
Mm.
And I've literally been reading their income statements, cash flow statements, and balance sheets.
Yeah.
And their capital expenditure just does not make sense. In fact, their capital expenditure has been decreasing over the last couple of years.
Mm.
What has been increasing steadily over the years is the percentage of money going towards salaries and employee benefits. So just to give you an idea, Eskom is currently in about 400 billion rands worth of debt.
Yeah.
The current salary bill represents 4.25% of that debt, right?
Mm.
That just goes to show you where the actual money is going to. If Eskom wanted to save itself and it wanted to generate capacity, what it would do is it would say, we're putting a freeze, especially on top executives' earnings, and we'd start incentivizing the people that we need on the ground to do the job, the actual engineers, the actual electricians, the people with the skills required to actually get the job done.
Mm.
Now, as far as capital expenditure goes, I mean, the CEO has come out very publicly stating that Eskom has no intention of increasing capacity in their traditional coal-fired stations because they don't think there's a future in it and it doesn't make sense from an economic perspective.
Yeah.
So whilst I certainly tend to agree with what he's saying, and I think that the only way to sort out our electricity supply issue in the country is to privatize the grid and to allow private enterprise to feed into the grid.
Mm.
I think that's the only way you solve the problem. And I agree with him on that. The question is, why do we keep going back to the taxpayers every year and asking for more money simply to increase salaries? It is ridiculous.
Definitely. Now, that was going to actually be my next question, whether you think Eskom should be unbundled or not. Now, getting back to something also as well, and I think this was when President, our current sitting president, was the deputy president, and apparently he was also on the task team to make sure that Eskom doesn't actually face another state of load shedding and all of those. So I believe there was a task team that was just dedicated to making sure that Eskom did not experience power cuts as well. What was the responsibility of that task team, and what do they achieve, actually? Because we're still experiencing load shedding, nevertheless.
Well, more importantly, let's talk about the actual result, because, you know, everything else is semantics. I'm one of those people who say, look at the numbers, look at the facts, and that will tell the story. This year so far, we have burned 5.2 billion rands worth of diesel keeping the lights on. In June alone, we spent 1.25 billion rand on diesel keeping the lights on. We are currently burning 9 million liters of diesel a day at Eskom to keep the lights on. This, in the first 5 months of 2022, we've used 27 times more diesel than we used in 2016, in the whole of 2016.
Yeah.
So what this tells you is that we're becoming more reliant on the temporary solution to keep the lights on, which is using diesel generators, as opposed to the actual coal-fired power stations. And what that tells you is all these task teams have done nothing but waste time, have done nothing but waste taxpayers' money, and done nothing but hold in darbers and eat buffets all day and drink all day, and all at the cost of the taxpayer. And the frustrating part for me as an entrepreneur, and I come at this purely from an economic perspective. We are in a situation in this country where we're making ourselves globally uncompetitive. We've moved into a position of becoming a net importer of everything. We're even at the point where we're starting to consider bringing power ships to our shores to import electricity. We've got to get back to a position where we start talking about how do we industrialize this nation. In order to become an industrialized nation, to produce things, to export, to bring in foreign currency, to bring in dollars, to bring in pounds, to bring in yen, we've got to produce something on the African soil. We cannot keep taking out raw material under our feet, shipping it out overseas to China and bringing it back as a microwave, walking into macro, buying that thing with rand and thinking that we've done a good job. We've done a terrible job.
Definitely.
We haven't closed the loop in terms of the economic cycle. And the reason we're not closing it is because we haven't got the capacity to produce in this country. And the reason we don't have capacity is because there's a lack of governance in this country.
Go into a more practical, solution that maybe entrepreneurs like the pizza guy that I just read about, Andrew Sfiso Nyembe, who owns a hair salon, that they could do. Because also, again, the problem is they say they do not have really enough money to actually buy generators and all. Because also generators need petrol. And maybe what are some of the amicable solutions that you as an entrepreneur have used over the years experiencing load shedding?
Look, I think, you know, we don't have many solutions at the moment. I mean, you've either got generators or you've got backup batteries or you've got solar panels on your roof. But those are band-aids to the problem. And I think the only way to solve this problem is to really get the government buy-in in this situation and really say, guys, we need to unbundle Eskom and we need to do it aggressively. Because here's the simple reality that we've got in this country, and now we're starting to see it in every state-owned enterprise. We have a situation where government is setting the rules. We then have a situation where government is refereeing the game, and they're also playing in the game. You cannot have a situation where government is participating in all three aspects. Government needs to set the rules, they need to referee the game, and they need to let business play in the game. This is how an economy works. But the problem is we've got government playing in the game and basically keeping up private enterprise. And they do it whilst basically demonizing private enterprise. The only way we're going to get out of this situation is to say, let's take the grid and let's allow private enterprise to feed into it. Let's allow business to do its thing. And I promise you, within a very short space of time, you'll see this electricity crisis disappear. Because where there is commerce, the problem will get solved.
Definitely. Thank you so much with regards to that. Now, I'd like us to move on to another major issue here in South Africa, which is the fuel price hike. Now, I remember, I think I saw an article that said the price hike is due to the cost of actually of the fuel and also the cost associated to getting fuel here in South Africa. Now, on your videos, you break down the actual cost of petrol and cost of getting petrol here, and then other costs which are levies. Now, do you believe that we're paying a lot with regards to levies and it should be decreased?
Well, it's a difficult question, and you know that's why I put out as many videos on the subject as I did. So on TikTok, I did this whole series of videos, and they've gained millions and millions of views. And the main thing I wanted to explain to people, because if you travel to our neighboring countries, Swaziland, Lesotho, if you go to Namibia, Botswana, many of the times we are supplying those countries, and the fuel price is actually cheaper there, even though we are supplying them. And people don't understand why. Part of the reason is taxation, but we need to go back a step. First of all, the entire world is experiencing a fuel crisis. This has got a lot to do with the war between Russia and Ukraine. It's also got to do with the whole war on the petrodollar at the moment. There's a big unsettling in the world on the petrodollar. And if you follow the historical trend of fuel prices, there's always going to be peaks and there's going to be lows. So we're currently in a peak at the moment. This is a natural state of the market. So the price will eventually come down. My argument that I was trying to put across in the video is that I really want the South African public to understand and debate and discuss is the fact that currently we're paying roughly R7.39 for every litre of fuel you put in your car goes to the government in the form of taxation, right? And that is comprised of about 52 to 58 different taxes and levies. Now, here is the issue. I'm actually not against the fuel taxes because, look, we need to have roads that function. We need to have infrastructure that works. The problem is that we are taxed so many times on the way to the pump. We are triple and quadruple taxed. And so let me explain it this way. You receive your salary, you're going to pay income tax, right? You then put your car on the road, you're paying a licensing fee for that car. You then go through a toll booth, you pay a toll fee. And it just goes on and on and on. So by the time you get to the fuel pump and you're now pumping that fuel into your car, you've already paid many, many taxes on the way to the pump. And so what we have is we have a situation where you're being triple and quadruple taxed by the time you get to the pump. And so my argument is very simply this. Government has become very good at stealing money out of the consumer's pocket, the taxpayer's pocket, by taking a couple of cents here and a couple of cents there and hoping nobody will see it. And the way they do this is they do it by taking a little couple of cents on a couple of liters here and just writing it off and nobody ever questions it. And the problem is we're at a point now where the fuel price is so high that people have to ask the question. So I've actually said very publicly, I'm actually in favor of saying let's raise the fuel tax. Let's go to a standard 10 rand per liter tax, but let's abandon all other taxes.
All other taxes,
Because then we are paying an equitable consumption-based tax. If you use more, you pay more tax. If you use less, you pay less tax. But we know it will never happen because in this situation we are in this country, what happens here is whenever government runs out of money, all they do is they reach into the taxpayer's pocket, they increase taxes, find another way to tax you, and take more money out of your pocket. And so every year, your salary is worth less and less and less and less. And that is the problem. So whilst the fuel price increases are definitely a major issue, what people need to start being aware of is the fact that government has continued to increase taxes on the fuel price. And they've continued to increase your personal taxes over the last decade to a point where they are taxing the average citizen into poverty. And this cannot be allowed to continue.
Yeah, definitely. It is actually quite shocking, you know, when you actually put it out. This is the information that is there available, but, you know, when it's actually being put out, you know, it's quite shocking how many times a person gets taxed in this country, you know. And I think, you know, the moving forward, actually, as we are being more aware of these issues, we really need to put our foot down and actually decide which tax do we want to pay. And what should the government do with regards to that? Now, 2024, it is going to voting. I think the conferences are starting now with other parties as well and all of those things. Do you think we should change parties maybe and then we'll see a change in how the country is run? Also looking at the results currently of, you know, a coalition that has happened in quite a number of cities.
Look, to be perfectly honest with you, I'm a capitalist, I'm an economist, I don't buy into politics. I think politicians are the biggest bunch of liars under the planet. I think they buy votes based on popularism. They say whatever people want to hear. Mm. I'm more inclined to vote for somebody who tells me what I don't want to hear. I'm more inclined to cast my vote for somebody who speaks logic and tells people the uncomfortable truth. Mm. The problem is with the politicians in this country is that they all speak to the voice of what people want to hear. And what people want to hear is the easy stuff. They want to hear that they're gonna get free stuff. They want to hear that everybody's going to get a job. Everybody's going to get education. Mm. The reality is we've got to start teaching people in this country. You've got to get off your backside and you've got to go and earn it. More importantly, we've got to start teaching the youth of this country that we cannot continue to fight the battles that our grandparents fought. We're busy fighting. We're fighting arguments for old people. We need to start fighting arguments for young people because it's the future that matters. We can't change what happened in the past. We can only change the future. So when it comes to politics, I have zero opinion on politics. I only focus on the economics. But I can tell you one thing. If we continue to do what we've done, we will continue to have the same result we've got today. So we have to do something different. Yeah. Now, as far as politics go, I can tell you I don't believe that anyone in this country is qualified at the moment in politics to run this country.
Yeah.
All of them come there based purely on popularism. I'm looking for people who can run businesses. I'm looking for people who understand economics, who understand international trade relations, who understand how to put this country back on the map in terms of creating an industrialized nation. Mm. I'm talking about people who understand the importance of building schools and making sure that our people are educated.
Yes.
Talking about bringing back trade and industry. Talking about making sure that young people, when they leave school, when they leave universities, have got a vocation to go into, even if just as an apprenticeship. Those are the things that are important. This nonsense about talking about how we're going to divide up the land and talking about specific positions earmarked for specific people based on specific colors, it's nonsense. It needs to end. People are tired of having the arguments of their grandparents.
We need
to build this country for young people, and we need to get the pensioners out of this government. We need to get young blood into this government.
Definitely.
And we need to start focusing on the economy and the money. And I say this every single day with every young person I have a discussion on. We are stupid in this country because we're fighting on the same patch of land for rands. Mm. And rands are worth nothing today. We should be focusing on how do we stand shoulder to shoulder in this country to bring dollars in. How do we bring pounds in? How do we bring yen in? How do we bring the money to this country? But instead, we're fighting like a bunch of rats on the ground for rand. And it is stupid, and we need to wake up. We need to go and fetch and make this country stand up on the world stage. That is the only way we're going to fix our problem.
It is definitely shameful what is happening in this country, definitely. And thank you so much for actually taking the time and sharing this information with us. Now, I'd like to know, Thambi, if the listeners out there do want to contribute in making this information spread far and wide so that more of our people are actually aware of what is happening and how the government is actually running this country rather than these theatrics we're seeing on the media, actually. How can I contribute into making sure that this kind of information is being spread far and wide?
Well, the most important thing is to, when you see posts like this on social media, first of all, try and verify that the information is correct. You know, you don't want to spread misinformation.
Mm.
But when you see there's good information, share it. And you know, people say, what do I get out of sharing the information? Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
It starts by educating the person next to you. And I started this journey out. I literally only joined TikTok 4 weeks ago. I've got 180,000 people following me on there now.
Mm.
And my objective was, if I can just educate 5 people, and they can educate 5 people, and they can educate 5 people, we can start a chain reaction, because I believe there is real education missing that that mainstream media is not providing us. Because mainstream media, as far as I'm concerned, is captured.
Definitely.
It is captured. Definitely. It is captured by certain political messages, by certain capitalist messages. And we need to get control of our domestic situation.
Yeah.
We have to get in control of what is in front of us. And you know what? Thank goodness for social media, because for once, we've got an opportunity to talk to each other on a level playing field without somebody interfering.
Mm.
And so my belief is, you know, get on to people who have obviously a little bit of a brain in this country. Follow them and share their stuff, because that's how we educate each other. My TikTok profile is MoneyTribe21. Anybody wants to follow can go and follow it. I've also got a YouTube channel, MoneyTribe21. go and follow. I'm putting out these kind of posts almost every single day. And this is what I want to do. I want to educate people because I've got children who are going to grow up in this country.
Definitely.
And their children are going to grow up in this country. And I want to leave a better tomorrow.
Mm, definitely. Thank you so much, Justin. And hopefully our listeners definitely heard that, and we're going to be doing just that. And I invited you here on the show because of the information I'm seeing, and I think definitely our people need to know such information and why things are happening the way they are happening. Because as you say, we have a captured media, and we don't want to also be captured in that way. Because we're going to continue fighting the battles that our grand parents were fighting as well. So thank you so much for taking this interview and for taking this call.
My pleasure. Absolute pleasure.
This is an MUT Radio podcast.